Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, January 16, 2015. Western Equatoria state officials try to resolve ongoing battles between cattle keepers and farmers.
We can handle the issue of cattle coming into Western Equatoria state without causing the citizens, the host citizens, trouble. This is what we are discussing now, and it is going very healthy.
And students who graduated from an agricultural program in Wau say they are ready to help feed their communities.
We are a small but a university that is growing steadily. And then you see a university that began in 2008 in a very short period. In each of these faculties in Juba, we have applications not less than 1,000 per year.
We're going to have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. But first, we go to Mundri in Western Equatoria. Government officials from Western Equatoria, Central Equatoria, Jonglei, and Lek states have spent the last 2 days trying to find ways to ease tension between cattle herders and farming communities. The officials say deadly violence and clashes between the two groups have caused destruction to property and crops. VOA fellow Nabil Biagio has the story.
When fighting broke out in South Sudan 13 months ago, cattle keepers fled violence in Jonglei and Lek State. Many sought refuge and grazing land for their cattle in Western Equatoria. But local farmers have complained that the cattle trampled on and eat their crops and robbed them of their livelihoods. There have been clashes between farmers and herders in Western Equatoria for several months now. The conference in Mundri was an attempt to resolve differences between the two sides.
We are now coming up with the resolutions on how we can handle the issue of cattle coming into Western Equatoria state without causing the citizens, the host citizens, trouble. This is what we are discussing now, and it is going very healthy, and people are a bit happy to see how we are conducting the conference.
That's Bengasi Joseph Bakasoro, governor of Western Equatoria state. He attended the conference in Mundri. Bakasoro says the cattle herders are not only destroying farmland, but also causing insecurity in large parts of Western Equatoria.
They continue coming and then entering into farms. They destroy the crops, and some of them also destroy the livelihood of the people, especially in the Mundri and Meridi area. And also some abducting few people here and there. And in the process, we continue to lose lives.
He says another reason that makes the cattle keepers a big threat to the local people is the fact that they're armed, some of them heavily.
The cattle herders are well equipped with the automatic weapons, and when they come and enter the farm and destroy the crops, there is no way you can talk because you are not armed like them. And if you are armed like them also, then it will end up in violence.
Bakasoro says participants at the conference have come up with binding resolutions for both the farmers and the cattle herders. Joseph Ngere, who represents Mundri in the National Assembly, told South Sudan in Focus by phone that one of the resolutions gives cattle keepers 21 days to leave Western Equatoria. Bakasoro says that is what the local people want.
What the citizens generally request is that let the cattle return back to their places and avoid destroying of crops and avoid the killing of our people. So mainly the resolution will gear around the return of the cattle to their original places.
Local officials have not come up with a death toll from the rift between the cattle herders and farmers. There is also no official assessment of how much destruction has been caused by the cattle or by the clashes between herders and farmers in Western Equatoria State. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
Top officials with the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, say they are working with faith-based organizations in South Sudan to reconcile communities divided by the country's ongoing conflict. Linda Etim with USAID East Africa, Sudan and South Sudan program is leading a team in Juba that is exploring ways to partner with faith-based groups to try to reconcile communities torn apart by ethnically targeted killings across the country. Etim told reporters at a news conference in Juba today that the team is meeting with heads of various faith-based organizations
to identify strategies. And so our next pillar is really focused on who are the people out there that we can partner with? What are the new partnerships that we can create? What are the connections that we can make, both within our country, but with the wider donor community outside of the United States?
Etim says the U.S. government strongly believes that faith-based organizations are key to restoring peace in South Sudan through confidence-building activities in communities. She says her visit to the country is also aimed at healing the trauma suffered by hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese affected by the conflict.
Our next pillar is to work to sustain the development gains that were made since the Comprehensive Peace Agreement was reached. Now, we know that a number of those gains have been lost, but we also know that investments in people are things that can't be lost forever.
J. Mark Brinkmuller is the director of USAID's Center for Faith-Based and Community Initiatives. He says he and Etim have already met with officials of several organizations, including the South Sudan Council of Churches. But he says more efforts are needed to address the critical needs of South Sudanese people.
Those are all things that we're going to take back with us, talk again to the religious community here, and try to bring together more conversations between religious leaders and institutions here in South Sudan with those in the United States, and again, working with the U.S. government and U.S. Agency for International Development.
Last year, the U.S. government suspended funding to development projects in South Sudan to focus instead on providing humanitarian support to nearly 2 million people uprooted from their homes by the conflict. The U.S. also suspended South Sudan's membership to the Africa Growth Opportunity Act, or AGOA, due to human rights violations stemming from the conflict. Etim says USAID will continue to work with the government of South Sudan, but only regarding protection of South Sudanese lives. Simon Wudu prepared that report from Juba. Warrap state government officials have begun training their staff on how to manage financial resources and an electronic payroll system. State Minister, County Commissioners and accounting officers attended the first phase of the training, which ended yesterday in Kwajok. For VOA News, Santino Manud Ayuel has more from that state.
Officials said the training will be rolled out in counties and payams over the next 18 months. They say the training is aimed at improving local revenues collection, enabling the employees to understand and use electronic payroll, as well as build their capacities to monitor and evaluate how local officials are using funds meant for development projects at the county level.
Management of the resources is the most challenging in this state. So this training is going to help the planners, the management of the resources, and the implementation of the services to our people.
Ashilti Tumadi, the state local government minister, organized the training. According to him, the first round of training will focus primarily on identification of gaps that called for training.
Basically, it will train the staffs in the six counties, the leadership, the executive directors, and then the finance and establishment officers on how to manage public finance and also electronic payrolls in the counties. They will be identifying the training gap, which will be pursued in the next 18 months.
The Irifin Union is funding the training. Chigonga Lausias is a senior advisor of the capacity building program.
The objective of the workshop, one, is to ensure that local government implement the local government public financial management manual, which was rolled out in year 2013. Two, we are going to support state and local government staff by building their capacities in public financial management and the payroll management system.
Joseph Bonganyer is the state public service minister. He says the initiative will improve the performance of the state employees, many of whom, he says, are incompetent. Wong outlines some of the challenges facing the state labor force.
Low level of skill and educational background of staff, lack of proper recruitment and promotion for practice, lack of support to civil service institutions, lack of employees' performance appraisal, lack of materials for payroll machine.
Wong says his ministry will ensure the employees make use of new skills learned from training.
And Minister of Finance and Economic Planning shall form a 7-member team that will be tasked and mandated to oversee performance of the staff of the counties.
The second phase of the workshop is to begin in mid-February. For BOA News, I'm Santino Menudayuel in Kwajok.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, health officials say there are still guinea worm cases in South Sudan, but not nearly as many as there used to be. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you cope with family members who snore while they sleep?
This, according to traditional bio, when someone is snoring, then you can just go and wake him or her up so that you will inform him that you are snoring. At that stage, and then that person will stop from being snored. And then when it stops, maybe it can give you some time to sleep.
In the morning, I can counsel them. I tell them that it's not good. If they refuse, I can go away from them and don't sleep with them anymore. If it's my husband, I can try and live with that thing. It's okay.
I just wake them up. I wake them up, and then when they get back, they maybe have stopped snoring.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The editor of the Juba Monitor newspaper says South Sudan is becoming too dangerous for journalists to report on the conflict in the country. Veteran journalist Alfred Taban says national security forces have harassed him and his staff. He says that he is not discouraged, but will have to self-censor reports that appear in the Monitor.
Just yesterday, the security rang the editorial director and asked her to go to their office. When she went, they told her that they have decided to close down Juba Monitor. That is my newspaper. Because they said there were two articles that were very much against the system. There was an article yesterday itself by one of our editors talking about the conflict in this area, in this country, and he described it as a Nuer Dinka conflict in which both groups are fighting for supremacy in this country at the expense of all others.
Taban says the government is too sensitive about any reporting of the realities in the 10 states of South Sudan. He says many reports about Warab State, which is where President Kiir hails from, are viewed by security operatives as an attack on the president.
A few days before, they said this same writer wrote something about Warab, accusing the people of Warab of neglecting their own people in the state of the president, that's correct. So they said these two articles really are very bad, and that means Juba Monitor is completely against the system, and they decided to close it down.
Taban says he and his newspaper are at the mercy of security operatives. He's calling on the international community to take action to stop the government from interfering with the work of journalists.
Yes, my final word is really that the U.S. government can help us by sending a very strong message to the government that what it is doing is not really in the interest of this country. I think the U.S. government has not been talking with a very strong voice. I mean, if they had been talking with a very strong voice, I'm sure the government would have noted this.
That was veteran South Sudanese journalist Alfred Taban talking about the latest crackdown on the media in South Sudan. This audio was given to South Sudan in Focus, courtesy of a South Sudanese journalist who did not want his name to be mentioned because he's too afraid of his life. Earlier this week, we told you that the total eradication of guinea worm is within sight, thanks to the Carter Center, an NGO run by former U.S. President Jimmy Carter. 70 cases of guinea worm disease were reported in South Sudan in 2014, according to the Carter Center. That's just over half of all the cases worldwide. But the country's health officials note that there has been a huge reduction of infections each year over the last 9 years. Health officials say they hope, with the help of the Carter Center, to eradicate the disease very soon. Philip Thornaleu files this report from Juba.
Makoy Samuel Yebi is the National Director for South Sudan's Guinea Worm Eradication Program. He says the country has come a long way seeing the campaign to eradicate the disease started in 2006.
At the time, guinea worm disease was found everywhere in southern Sudan. In fact, by the end of 2006, we have recorded 20,581 cases. So since then, with intensive interventions in all the endemic states at the time, there were 7 non-endemic states at the time, so we continued to attain progressive reduction in cases until by the end of 2013, we only reported 113 cases.
Last year, along with South Sudan's 70 cases, the Carter Center reported 56 other cases of guinea worm in Mali, Ethiopia, and Chad. Yabi says South Sudan has made a great step toward eradicating the disease. Last year, he says, guinea worm cases existed only in 3 counties compared to 40 counties 9 years ago.
If you look back to when we started the campaign 2006, and then we actually attained over 99% reduction in cases of guinea worm disease. So to date, today is 16th of January, we have not reported a single case yet for 2015. So we are hoping that it will continue to be like that.
Yebi says 58 of the 70 guinea worm cases reported in South Sudan last year were from Kapoita East County in eastern Equatorial State. The remaining 12 cases were from Aweria County in Lake State. Guinea worm is spread through drinking contaminated water. Yebi says the first step toward eliminating the disease is identifying those who have been drinking unsafe water and determining who has guinea worm.
If we can detect all those people with guinea worm and keep them out of water, nobody else gets the disease. And this is exactly what we are trying to do. We are trying to detect every person with guinea worm before they get to a point where they contaminate water. And if we are able to detect them all this year, all the remaining cases, and prevent them from entering water sources, then that's it. Nobody else gets guinea worm.
Yebi says sick people who voluntarily visit and report themselves to a health center with guinea worm are given free treatment and 500 South Sudanese pounds. He says this is done in order to encourage locals to report any new case of guinea worm and to prevent it from spreading in the community. And since 2006, the health ministry has been working with guinea worm volunteers in almost every village in South Sudan. The volunteers report any suspected cases of the disease to health authorities or to the Carter Center. They get paid 100 South Sudanese pounds for any case reported.
So as we speak, all villages, including the formerly endemic villages, we still have people who continue to report on weekly basis, on monthly basis, as to whether there is a guinea worm case or not. Certainly, there might be other areas outside areas where we are able to access. But I want to believe that we had a mechanism in place to ensure that if there is any case that pop up anywhere in southern Sudan, we'll be able to detect such a case.
Yebi says guinea worm remains a health problem in South Sudan because most people do not have access to clean drinking water. Yebi says since some areas have no roads or mobile telephone communications, there could be delays in reporting a new case. According to the Carter Center, in 1991, there were 23,735 villages with endemic transmission of guinea worm diseases in 21 countries across Africa and Asia. By the end of 2014, there were only 30 endemic villages in 4 countries, including South Sudan. Since there is no vaccine or medical treatment for the disease, it is being whipped out mainly through community-based interventions to educate and change behaviors, such as teaching people to filter their drinking water and preventing contamination by keeping anyone with an emerging guinea worm to stay away from water sources. For POA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Juba.
Still on health issues, a new study says HIV-positive children are much more likely to die from pneumonia than children who are not infected with the AIDS virus. It's estimated there are more than 3 million children under the age of 14 living with HIV. The vast majority are in sub-Saharan Africa. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports from Washington.
Researchers say deaths from pneumonia among HIV-positive children could be dramatically reduced by expanding current treatments. Dr. Harish Nair led the study to better understand the scope of the problem. He's with the University of Edinburgh's Center for Population Health Sciences.
We've been working on pneumonia estimates for over a decade now, and we realize that there are no estimates for pneumonia in HIV-infected children. We all know that pneumonia is an important cause of morbidity and mortality in HIV-infected children.
While it was clear pneumonia threatened HIV-positive children, Nair says it was not known just how many were actually affected. The global study his team conducted, the first of its kind, shed light on the problem.
What we see is globally, of the 116 million episodes of pneumonia occurring each year in under 5 children, 1.4 million episodes are in HIV-infected children, and of the 920,000 deaths from pneumonia in under 5 children, we find there are 88,000 deaths in HIV-infected children.
Africa and South Asia are the worst regions for HIV-positive children dying from pneumonia. Their weakened immune systems put them at greater risk. Pneumonia has been linked to poverty, poor living conditions, and inadequate health services.
To put this into perspective, a child who has HIV and who develops pneumonia has a 36-fold higher risk of dying compared to a healthy child who is HIV uninfected.
The study was commissioned by the World Health Organization and published in the Lancet Infectious Diseases Journal. The findings will be used to develop new care and treatment guidelines. Nair says AIDS drugs keep patients healthier and make them less susceptible to pneumonia. Buddy says while sub-Saharan Africa now has greater access to AIDS drugs, most of them are for adults.
Even now, the antiretroviral coverage in young children remains pretty low. For example, the data for coverage of antiretrovirals in children in under 5 years is not available. The other problem is that the antiretroviral coverage in children across the 0 to 14-year age group remains pretty low. It's about only 29% in these 22 high-priority global action plan countries.
Dr. Nair says opportunistic infections are very common in children with HIV. However, he says only about 30% receive the drug cotrimoxazole. The drug has been shown to lower the overall infection rate, not only for pneumonia, but also for malaria and sepsis. He also says children with HIV should be a top priority when administering the pneumococcal vaccine.
There have been studies which have shown that in HIV-infected children, once you've introduced the pneumococcal vaccine, the incidence of pneumonia decreased sharply.
He adds that diagnosing pneumonia in HIV-positive children needs to be strengthened at the primary care level. Nair also recommends rapidly scaling up antiretroviral therapy for pregnant women and young children with HIV. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
And now for some good news to farmers in South Sudan. 19 students from the Faculty of Agriculture graduated yesterday from Catholic University in Wau after completing a 5-year program. The students say they are hopeful their training will help them fight hunger in South Sudan. VOA fellow Michael Atit has more from Washington.
Lucia Valentino Yak is among the 3 female graduates in the program. She says she is grateful to her family for allowing her to finish her studies before marriage.
There are many problems like for us females in South Sudan.
Some families, they don't allow their daughters to go ahead with their education. One of the things is marriage, that one has to get married, and some ladies, they prefer getting married, and even some are forced instead of continuing with their education.
Valentino, like other graduates, have completed agricultural studies in both theory and practical knowledge of modern farming techniques during the 5 years program. Reverend Matthew Pagan is the vice chancellor for the Catholic University campuses in both Wau and Juba. He says the Catholic University has been impressed with the number of applicants they receive every year across the country.
We are a small but a university that is growing steadily. And then you see a university that began in 2008 in a very short period. In each of these faculties in Juba, we have applications not less than 1,000 per year. But due to difficulties of space, we only take 250. In Wau, also the same.
Catholic University provides studies through the Department of Agriculture and Environmental Science at Wau and the Faculty of Arts and Social Science Department in Juba. Another graduate student, Moses Gumdigur, says he enrolled because he does not want to see so much food being imported from neighboring Uganda. He says he will use the skills and the new techniques he learned to educate small farmers in his community so they too can produce more food.
South Sudan is rich. We want to make food available in our country. I must make sure to pass this knowledge we get to our community so that we learn them, we train them on modern agriculture, so that there are new techniques passed to other people in order for us to come with sustainable farming.
Valentino believes if girls are given equal opportunity for education, they can have a major impact on the development of the country.
The government also needs to encourage ladies to aspire for higher levels of education like men, because when ladies give their ideas, they can also participate in any decision-making processes of the country.
Along with various South Sudan government institutions, Catholic University had partnered with Virginia Tech University in the United States to fund educational programs in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Washington.
And that report by Michael Atit brings us to the end of our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Saida by JJD Muzika.
Evangelio Anna Maria Saida Malute.
We have been listening to JJD Muzika with the song Saida. I almost wanted to dance, but it's not possible to multitask in the studio here. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening and have a good weekend. We hope you'll join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.